And our second reading today is from the president of our other Unitarian Universalist Seminary. Rebecca Parker is the president of Star King School for the Ministry in Berkeley. And she writes, and I want to note that this is a beautiful poem that was read on Martin Luther King Day, and that's why I'm referring to it again, because it is such a favorite of mine. In the midst of a world marked by tragedy, there must be those who bear witness against unnecessary destruction and who, with faith, stand and lead in freedom, with grace and with power. There must be those who speak honestly and do not avoid seeing that which must be seen, of sorrow and of outrage, or of tenderness and of wonder. There must be those whose grief troubles the water, while their voices sing and speak refreshed words. There must be those whose exuberance rises with lovely energy that articulates the earth's joys. There must be those who are restless for respectful and loving companionship among human beings, whose presence invites people to be themselves without fear. There must be those who gather with a congregation of remembrance and compassion and draw water from old wells and walk the simple path of love for neighbor. And there must be communities of people who seek to do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with God, who call on the strength of soul force to heal and transform and bless life. There must be religious witness. Last Thursday evening, I was lucky enough to go rock climbing with the junior high youth group. They are hilarious. And as the youth group climbed the uneven walls, stretching for that next handhold, I thought about reaching and stretching. Doesn't March feel like a stretching month? We are so tired of winter. And reaching for spring, only to face another dusting of snow or a brisk morning. And watching our junior high youth reach for one handhold after another, often unable to see where they are climbing to, it reminded me of a time in my life when I was reaching, unable to see an end to my exertions. When I was in the eighth grade, the prettiest and most popular girl in school was Amy. She wore Guess jeans and a Spree tops, and most importantly, she had the cheerleader uniform with Captain embroidered right across the chest. And for the some reason, in the fall of eighth grade, she decided she hated me. I don't know why. I was awkward with a capital A. I had frizzy hair from a bad perm and big plastic glasses. Do you remember Sally Jesse Raphael? I had those glasses. Very, very uncool. Whenever I opened my mouth, these awkward things would come out, these sort of uncontrollable phrases that I didn't even know where they came from. I just tried to stay quiet as much as possible. Amy and I had algebra class together, and I liked algebra because I liked that there was always an answer. And she was assigned to sit behind me. Well, from the first day of class, she harassed me. She whispered, "You are so ugly. You'll never have a boyfriend. You're a loser." The bullying progressed. It got even worse. She said worse things, and she started pulling my hair, hard, sharp jerks. And then she started punching me in the back. Right behind me in class, she would sit there and just pummel me with her fists. I don't know what I did. "You are worthless," she said. "And if you tell anyone I'm doing this, my boyfriend will beat you up." Soon, I was avoiding shirts that would show my bruises. I didn't want to explain to anyone where they had come from. I was trying so hard not to cry in class that my wonderful, gentle teacher, Miss Mitchell, pulled me aside several times to ask me what was going on at home. Nothing was going on at home, but unfortunately, every time she turned to write an equation on the blackboard, I got another sharp punch from Amy's knuckles. Soon, school seemed nearly impossible. Wherever I was, I could hear her insults hissing in my ears. "You are worthless." I couldn't concentrate in class, and I was a nervous wreck at home. I knew I would have to sit in algebra with Amy again soon. The only place I relaxed was at church, the First Baptist Church of Dayton, where I grew up. On Sunday mornings, I woke up with an openness in my chest. The heavy stone of dread was lifted for the day. You see, at school, I was at the very bottom of the social hierarchy. And in middle school, it's pretty important. But at church, I was somebody, even with frizzy hair and plastic glasses. I was part of a congregation of almost exactly this size, and I knew everyone. The adults and the kids loved me. We all loved each other. Adults asked me how I was in this unique way that showed they really wanted to know the answer. They hugged me and they told me to hang in there, even though I never told them what was wrong. They just knew. And my best friends were at church. My youth group was my whole world. We loved each other and we didn't judge, frizzy, perms, or not. No one cared or probably even noticed that I never had guest jeans. And so on Sundays, I was free. So free that on Sunday mornings, I practically pranced in the big oak doors to the church. So free that I was giddy at youth group. Church truly was my sanctuary. The place where I was loved so much by so many people that it made the rest of my week bearable. Rebecca Parker, the theologian that we read earlier, said, "There must be those who are restless for respectful and loving companionship among human beings, whose presence invites people to be themselves without fear." At church, I got to be myself without fear. The adults and the youth at church were restless for this world, a world where humans could be themselves, where we treated each other with compassion. And so we created this Sunday morning world where people gathered to be giddy and to be free. But the thing about sanctuaries, these calm places where we can refill and restock on hope, where we can stock up on unconditional love, is that eventually they stop being just places for us to rest. Eventually, like it or not, they become places where we get stronger, where we get more brave. Eventually, these sanctuaries, these filling stations for the soul, push us to call on the strength of our soul force to heal, to transform, and to bless life, even if the life that needs transforming is our life. One particularly love-filled Sunday morning, I realized that I had to stand up to Amy. I didn't want to, but I had to. Enough was enough. My soul force was fed up with the insults and with the bruises, and I had to do something. With no actual plan in mind, I stomped into algebra class on Monday morning, knowing that today was the last day of my torment. I slid into my seat in front of Amy, and class began as usual, with sharp jabs in the back every time the teacher turned around. The next time the teacher's back was turned, I spun around to face Amy, and in a mysteriously calm voice, a voice much calmer than how I really felt, I said, "Enough. That's enough, Amy. No more." Well, Amy's eyes were huge. They were as big as dinner plates. And she had a wide O of a mouth. The whole class was silent. Everyone knew what had been happening. Finally, she squeaked out, "Okay, okay." She probably thought I was a psychopath. Amy never bothered me again. She never so much as made eye contact with me again. Now that I'm an adult, I wonder about her, about who was telling her she was worthless and ugly and stupid, because bullies just don't come from the ether. Her life must have been pretty dark. But in the summer between 8th and 9th grade, she moved all the way to Texas, and I've never seen her again. For me, that day, I discovered the power of soul force. It turns out it was brewing in me all along, and it was stirred into action by these people, this congregation that loved me so much. This power, this ability to stand up to hardships that are both great and small, this is the wonder of soul force. And it doesn't just apply to youth. We all have big and small rock walls to climb. We're all stretching for the next handhold. And I see the power of soul force in this congregation. I see it every week, how we come and we fill up. We fill up at the filling station of the soul so we can make it through. We gather here on Sunday mornings exhausted by our lives, exhausted from caring so much and being able to do so little. And we leave built up and refreshed and emboldened. But why? What is it about this place, this sanctuary, that makes us stronger? What is emboldening our soul force? Unitarian Universalist Wayne Arneson had the congregation in Cleveland that was next to mine, and he wrote this benediction, which I really love. Wayne says, "Take courage, friends. The way is often hard. The path isn't never clear, and the stakes are very high. But take courage, friends, for deep down, there is another truth. You are not alone. You are not alone. The way is hard and the path is never clear, but at least you are not alone. When we gather on Sunday mornings for worship, or on Tuesdays for covenant group, or on Thursday nights for choir, we are not alone. First, we are surrounded by people that love us, our sacred friends, and our fellow spiritual travelers. We take courage because we are not alone. Our lives are filled with other people seeking and searching and trying to find a new way. And in this searching and this seeking together, we find the divine, we find the ineffable, that which is bigger than our individual selves. As you heard in the Sharon Welsh reading, in solidarity with others, in work for justice, we remain human. Our vision is ever growing. Our strategies for change have partial successes and require continual critique and revision. Yet this work, partial in its depth and in its scope, is divine. Our solidarity is divine. Our gathering together is divine. This month, as I'm sure you've realized, our theme is nourished. Last week, Linda talked about how this congregation nourishes her. And today, Judy talked about how we can nourish our congregation. We nourish each other when we gather together in community. We nourish that soul force so that we can manage the Amys in our lives, the difficult bosses, and the illnesses that never seem to end, and the family troubles. Our lives here together make it possible for us to live our lives out there, outside of this sanctuary, in a braver and a more just way. Rock climbing with a junior high youth group reminded me of how hard it is to grow up. But it also reminded me of the challenges that we all continue to face. But the thing about rock climbing is, we never climb alone. The entire time that I was climbing that wall that felt like it went on forever, I was in a harness. My legs were stretching and my arms were stretching and my muscles were saying, "What did we do wrong? Why are you punishing us?" But I was safely strapped into a contraption that would keep me in the air even if I let go of the wall. This contraption connected me to a guide down below who would use the harness to hold me up no matter what. And when my arms couldn't do it anymore, which frankly was pretty soon, I swung away from the wall. I swung out into space. But I didn't plummet to the floor. No, I just leaned into my harness, and the guide held me up until I could haul myself up that wall again. The road is long, and the path isn't clear. And if we could, we would clear it for each other. But the beauty is that we are not alone. We are guides for each other. And we will hold each other until we have the strength to climb again. My congregation growing up nurtured my soul force with kindness. And as I grow in ministry, I am fortunate enough to be in relationship with all of you. So I know I won't plummet. Because you people hold my harness even when my arms are exhausted. Can you feel the congregation holding you? Nourishing you? And how do you hold each other to give each other a bit of rest, a bit of sanctuary, until you can start climbing again? So that not even one of us ever falls. May we remember our sacred task in keeping this community a place of kindness, of support, and compassion. In a moment, we will rise and sing hymn 354, one of my favorite of all time. But first, I wanted to point out the words. We believe in life and in the strength of love. And we have found a need to be together. It is the strength of this love that holds us together in spiritual community. And it is this love that nurtures all our soul force so that we can go into the world to face challenges great and small. As Rebecca Parker writes, there must be communities of people who seek to do justice and love kindness and walk humbly with God, who call on the strength of Soul Force to heal and transform and bless life. May we all go forward strengthened enough to heal and transform and bless life. Please rise as we sing 354. We laugh.